nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
Yo! Welcome to Ladies of Nerdcore. This is your wonderful host, Ashley. I'm here with some friends. My other lovely co-hosts, say hello, Daniela. Say hello, Alex.
Hello, Alex.
Hello, Daniela.
Hello, Alex. Ashley.
Hello. This is episode 5, 6. Hello. What are we on? I don't even know. But thank you for listening. If you are listening, we're here for another week, and we have a lot of shit to talk about. How has everyone been doing? What have you guys been up to?
Just the same usual school, work, getting through life, reading on shit, and having an opinion. You, Alex?
I'm working, design, all that shit, and reading the headlines.
A lot of shit happening right now. How do you guys even find the time to, like, keep up with all this? I don't know how I do it. I can't even keep up with my Netflix documentaries. There's been so much shit out. Have you guys seen Leaving Neverland yet?
That's on the must watch list for me, but I'm also kind of, I guess I don't want to watch just for the fact that I like Michael Jackson's music, but we're going to get to that eventually. If it's true, then it's a bummer. Truly it is, in my opinion. You know, such a great icon like that, and all of a sudden you discover he wasn't just a great icon, he was a complete sicko. But I guess that's what's been coming out lately, and if we gotta realize the truth, then by all means, let the truth set everybody free.
That documentary, in case you are not familiar with Leaving Neverland, it's a 2-part documentary. It's 4 hours long in total, and it's pretty damn brutal. I put this off for a while because, you know, I am a Michael Jackson fan myself. I think a lot of people online were having mixed feelings about this, knowing that it was coming out. I watched it, and it's horrific. Alex, have you seen this yet?
I haven't seen it. I've just seen the clips of of Wade and the other guy speaking to Gail.
Yeah. They have an hour-long Oprah special, actually, also, that came out right after this premiered. I haven't watched the interview yet. I actually want to. It's on HBO Go right now.
I actually watched the interview that.
You did?
Yes, I actually did. She said some pretty intense things. You know, I think she kind of has, what Oprah basically did is she had the same mutual belief that this is disgusting. It's sexual abuse. Obviously, Oprah has been through sexual abuse at her young age as well. So she understands the position that these gentlemen are in. But she also knows that Michael Jackson is iconic. So I think the way she explains it, it left people uneasy because it was so neutral. But I think that she explains it in a way that that basically sets everybody up to par, I guess, to put into words.
Okay.
Yeah, people hate it when you're neutral on something. They always want somebody to pick a side right off the jump.
I think that's harder.
Yeah, but she didn't necessarily do that.
Well, it's good that she was able to maintain that balance.
Oh, okay, but I'm pretty sure she has her own opinion on it. Like everybody does. Like, you know, like Alex says, everyone's trying to have an opinion, or you should have an opinion, especially on situations like this. But, I mean, it's really hard to, especially because we do have to acknowledge that there are some stories that are just said just to be said, and it's such a gray area, and, you know, I feel bad for lawyers, truly. I mean, how can you distinguish the truth from the lie?
Exactly. I have tried really, really hard to not have an opinion, but after watching that documentary, I believe both of those men. They go into great detail because there's a lot of questions that I'm sure a lot of people have, like, why would you let your 7-year-old child sleep in a bed with a complete stranger? I don't care how well you think you know him. You don't know him. And they address that, how he more or less charmed his way into their families, gained their trust. In the beginning, it was really great. He was very supportive. He saw a lot of potential in both of these young men. And then it gets really, really bad. Like, it slowly starts with, like, little things. And when you're that little, you're not going to be able to tell if you're being abused. I imagine that there's quite the internal struggle with that as you get older. And I can't imagine what either of these men probably went through. They go into details so much as to showing letters also that Michael Jackson wrote to these young boys. And you can just see, like, something was fucking happening. The shit wasn't right. Sorry, I'm like blabbing on about this, but yeah, like, we could talk about
of course.
Yeah, we could talk about this later, because this kind of ties in with our Roseanne Barr discussion about her disgusting ass comments on the Me Too movement.
In regards to the R. Kelly incidents as well, especially with the interview with Gayle King, that was interesting as well.
Did you see the SNL skit of it?
The one that was last night? I saw parts of it, and I mean, I want to say too soon, but then yet again, it was perfect. I think they did a good job just stating their opinions, to put it lightly.
Like when they said, I've given you 30 years of clues, kind of like turning it around when he's saying, haven't done anything or something like that.
I gave you 30 years of my life. That's fucking hilarious. I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh at that. Yeah. But I gave you 30 years of clues. God, that's a great line.
Oh my God. Well, if you think about it, SNL's awesome when they do things like that. I remember, you know, to tie back into the documentaries, I was watching the 2000 documentary series on Netflix, and they basically talk about the political campaign in 2008, which was John McCain and Sarah Palin and obviously Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And obviously SNL had their skits going on throughout the campaign. And obviously Tina Fey does the exact same thing for Sarah Palin, where she's just mocking her, but it's not really mocking her if she's just literally taking what Sarah Palin says and just putting it in a skit and boom, done. Like, the jokes are there. Same thing with this R. Kelly skit that happened last night in SNL. Just, you know, a lot of the things he said, it was literally just, not even literally, it was just material to use that. I mean, it's sad, but it's also a joke, in my opinion.
That interview was crazy.
What they do, like you said, they take exactly what they were saying. So basically, they take something that was in a serious atmosphere. So like the Gayle interview, they take what he was saying seriously, but they use the same things he was saying, but they put it in a comedic environment where, you know, you're kind of, it's a little bit more lighter. So you know that you get the joke, but it's still, I mean, the truth is there. I don't really think they spin anything, you know?
They didn't. Ashley, what were you going to say?
Sorry. No, I was just going to say SNL is just killing it lately with all of their, you know, skits and their commentary on what's going on. They're doing it in such a smart way. It's easy for them, I assume, with all the shit that's coming out in the world. There's so much to talk about, like the R. Kelly thing.
I was just going to say that.
Sorry. I was just going to say with, like, people making a complete dumbass of themselves every single day, people getting caught up in dumb shit, and with this generation that we're, this era that we're in now, the Me Too era, you can't move like that. Like, just because some of the shit was okay 20 years ago doesn't mean that it's gonna be okay now.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because I think this week alone, I actually had 3 guys tell me, I hate that we're living in a time about political correctness. And I knew what they actually meant, or what they intended. At least I hope that's what they're intending. But I think you know, that statement alone already says a lot, that we still have a lot of work to be done, that, you know, they're getting offended at the fact that women are correcting them, you know, and I think that's part of the Me Too movement as well, is that it's all about call-out culture, and of course, women are standing up for themselves, and that's why you have all these stories coming up to light, and I think it's an awesome thing. It's just, it's sad that there's just so many stories that were hidden behind the scenes, but, you know, if you can't handle the political correctness, then maybe you're the one that needs to be politically correct in the first place. Like, I mean, I can go on about this, but
yeah, know, no,
I don't want to darken this easily.
No, and what I was trying to, I'm so sorry. What were you going to say?
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. No, what I was trying to get at earlier that I failed to gather my thoughts on is just that this is a different era. This is a different time. Everyone, I feel, is on this accountability train, and I think that's great. Whether it be taking self-accountability or holding your friends to higher standards, it's amazing. And I think now is the time for these stories, you know, to actually be heard. People are actually taking it seriously. How long did it take for this R. Kelly shit to blow up? There's been allegations and rumors for, like, over a decade. So why is it being paid attention to now versus back then? It's because we won't allow that shit now. And what I liked about the R. Kelly documentary is that they even talk about, like, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, like, all these guys from, like, way back in, like, the 50s who were doing the same scumbag shit. Even David Bowie, I think he had, like, a 15-year-old girlfriend, and I can't get behind that. Like, you can't consent when you're that young, and you don't know what's going on half the fucking time. That's what kind of makes it hard. It makes it harder for me to watch documentaries like Surviving R. Kelly or Leaving Neverland, because when you hear these people speak about their experiences and how long that they had to stay quiet for, it's fucking heartbreaking. And then for them to have this courage now and to be able to step up and talk about it now is a great thing. And it sucks when people like Roseanne Barr or all these, you know, Me Too movement haters start victim blaming and they start, you know, discrediting these stories just because, oh, why didn't you come out sooner? Like, why did you wait this long? The healing process for sexual abuse survivors, even domestic abuse survivors, is very long. It takes a while. My mom is a domestic abuse survivor, and there are things that happened 20 years ago that I never knew happened that she's barely able to talk about now.
Oh, absolutely. And especially right now, what I like the most is that everyone's talking about that boys cannot always be boys, like that mentality that, oh, it's just a man, he's just being a boy, you know, like they're brushing it off like it's acceptable. I think I'm glad that we're finally calling them out. You guys obviously know my background. I talked about it a few times about me living with my brothers and, you know, that mentality of men are just going to be men. They're just going to do the things they do and you're just going to have to be compliant and go with it. That's completely wrong because you're basically, this is the reason why people are silent for so long. Any words on
you're that? You're enabling bad behavior, basically.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So,
I mean, what is there to do about it, especially with comments by Roseanne? What do you think she can do better?
Now that we're on the
subject, you can keep her mouth shut.
Anyway, we all have to say. All right, go for it, Alex. You go.
I don't know, Roseanne Barr. I wrote her off a long time ago. It's kind of the same thing of why I don't watch the R. Kelly thing, because I kind of wrote him off a long time ago as well. But her comments, I don't know. Why would you be upset about somebody coming forward about something traumatic that happened to them or something that just made them, you know, extremely uncomfortable? Why would you try and, like, say, oh, well, it's your fault anyways because you did this, this, and this? Like, what about the person that couldn't just be respectful from the start? Like, are we not going to hold them accountable, you know? So the shit she says, I don't know. I just kind of ignore it sometimes. Especially now that she feels that, well, now that she has a lot of time on her hands since her show got canceled.
Yeah, I think she's trying to become relevant again. Ashley, you were going to say something?
I was just going to give a little bit of background info on what we're talking about right now. If you guys are unaware of what Roseanne Barr has said recently regarding the Me Too movement, she recently went on the Candace Owens show, and they had an hour-long conversation about everything from Me Too movement participants being hoes to Donald Trump being this great deep thinker. The whole entire interview is pretty damn cringy. I don't know if either of you have watched it or if you guys just read about it, but they go back and forth between talking about white women privilege and then victim blaming. How, instead of blaming a woman for going to a hotel room to meet someone that she thought she could trust, why not blame the guy that should know, hey, don't fucking whip your dick out and start doing shit. Like, that's not right.
Be fucking grabbing pussies? Yeah, I know. It just goes back to that mentality where it's just like, oh, well, men are going to be men. It's totally acceptable. And it's fucking wrong. That's what it is.
You can't. Oh, I'm sorry. Are you reading up on it right now?
Yeah, she thinks. I like what it says. There's a headline, and this is what I'm quoting. Me Too women are hoes, but Trump is a thinker, and I think we should all be like him.
That's a fucking oxymoron if I ever heard one. Like, how does one have that sort of logic?
No, I truly don't know. Again, I just feel like she's trying to be relevant. And, you know, if you can't get them to agree with you, then piss them off. So.
That's a pretty...
I think it's only a matter of time before she gets banned from Twitter, like all the other ones have already.
Does she have a Twitter account again? Is she tweeting anything as of recently? They need to ban her just from being on public television. That's what they need to ban her from. Take away her mic. Take away her phone. She ain't right.
Is the Candace Owens, is that like her show? Is it like on YouTube or something?
I watched it on YouTube, so you can probably check it out on YouTube. I don't know where it's streaming. I thought it was a Fox News affiliate show, but I think it might be on YouTube.
It probably is.
Yeah.
It probably is associated with Fox.
So, in regards to all the topics that we talked about, the question goes, can artists separate themselves from their work? Alex, you mentioned this question earlier, and I thought it was such a brilliant question, so of course we're going to have to bring it back out loud. What are your thoughts on that?
Personally, from somebody who creates stuff, I can't separate my art from myself sometimes, which is why if I get certain asked to do certain designs for certain companies, I always look into it just to see what the company is about and learn a little bit about them, because I don't want to represent my work with something that I don't either agree with or believe in or feel like it's got a bad message to it. So when I see, you know, musicians or actors or something like that, like, it's hard for me to know that they've done some shady shit or bad stuff in their personal life and then go and like support them and go see their movie or buy their music. Like, that's hard for me to separate from like a consumer part as well.
I agree. Very good point. I just don't get the whole concept of separating the art from the artist when the art and the artist are the same person. So how can you separate it? Like, I can't listen to Nas anymore. He was one of my favorite rappers growing up. But then when his ex-wife came out and told everyone about how he used to beat her up and get blacked out drunk, after hearing about that, I just can't support someone like that. Like, how do you support someone who hurts women? it's an age-old question that has been brought up a lot in my life. Coming from a musical background, you meet a lot of people in your in that line of work that you think are cool, and then you spend 2 or 3 weeks on tour with them, and you see, you know, some guy you thought was awesome pouring his beer on some girl just because he didn't like what she said. I don't think you can separate the art from the artist when they're a complete shithead.
And I also feel that art is an extension of the artist. So it's, I don't know, yeah.
R. Kelly's a great example for that, because look at some of the songs he wrote. Some of his biggest songs are linked to these girls that he's messing around with. Look at his relationship with Aaliyah. They wrote "Age Ain't Nothing but a Number," and it's about his predatory behavior, essentially.
Married her when she was 15.
All kinds of terrible shit. He used to call himself the Pied Piper. Are you guys familiar with the folktale for the Pied Piper?
It rings a bell, but it's not clicking. But for those who don't know, like myself, go ahead and explain it to us.
It's an old folktale about someone who lures children out of villages with their magical instrument. And he used to call himself the Pied Piper. That's fucking creepy.
Is that mentioned in the R. Kelly documentary?
They talk about that. And it's also public knowledge. I even remember, you know, back when I used to listen to him in like the early thousands, he would constantly call himself that in interviews. There were so many red flags that we just ignored. And I look back at some of these interviews now and I'm like, how did no one say anything? Why did they let him keep doing this? Since Surviving R. Kelly has came out, there's been 2 additional tapes that are rumored to be in circulation. So this guy's got 3 tapes that are out and about with him and a 14-year-old girl, a 15-year-old girl, and we still can't lock him up.
Well, okay, the only thing that's locking him up right now is him not paying his child support. And I think one of the parts that he says during the interview with Gayle King is that, you know, obviously he goes on his rants. They shut off the cameras for a good while, and then they get back on the camera. And he mentions, like, you know, imagine what you're doing to my kids. And I'm thinking to myself, too, like, you have 2 girlfriends living with you. One of them's 21 and one of them's 23. You're supposedly worried about your kids. But I think shortly after that interview, that's when they charge him for the child support. And he's like thousands of dollars down from his child support. So I'm thinking to myself, like, you just gave this performance. And yeah, to some, it was believable. I'm not going to deny that parts of me felt bad for this human being. But then to know the truth, or to really, you know, like you said, the little hidden messages that been all along, they've been there the entire time. The clues, if you want to put it, they were all there, and we just chose to ignore it. So it's fucking sick.
Yeah.
I'm so glad these documentaries are being made, because it gives me something to binge watch, but it also gives me information to know that not everybody's what they seem. And it's basically the way Picasso says it is, art is a lie that makes us realize the truth. And I think these documentaries do an amazing job doing that. And to both what you, from what both of you guys said earlier, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I know for me, when studying about all the artistry that I've been learning, I'm pretty sure that with every single artist, filmmaker, singer, dancer, whoever, that there's a part of you in that performance or in that piece of work that is always going to be there. And if you're a disgusting human being, it's going to show.
Nicely put. SNL also said it best. He gave us 30 years of clues. That shit's funny. I'm going to be laughing at that line all day.
I think, too, it shows that how much we hold these celebrities or these artists on a pedestal, almost as if they're untouchable, that they're so, like, godly and that they're so right on everything. And I think we all, as a society, needs to, like, reevaluate that, because they're just as human as, you know, the person that you're standing in the supermarket, you know? They're they're, some of them aren't good people, and just because they made a song that you really like doesn't mean that, you know, they should get off easy and that they should just have a free pass.
Artists are damaged people. I'm a damaged person. I've written about a lot of things in my life. I got to tour for a little bit. I was really in the music scene, and I met so many people that I, you know, at one point looked up to, and upon my time in the music industry, I slowly learned that all my heroes were monsters. And that was really eye-opening for me. And I think that's why when I watch these documentaries, I'm not one of those, oh, Michael's innocent, he didn't do anything. Like, I don't know if he did it. Now, after watching Leaving Neverland, I think he's guilty as fuck. But I don't know Michael Jackson. Just because he wrote a bunch of, you know, songs I liked when I was a kid doesn't mean that I know him. And I think, like you said, Alex, that we get so attached to these celebrities, we get so attached, emotionally invested into some of these artists, and we lose our minds. We start to put up the blinders, like, look at, you know, the families that were affected by Michael Jackson. They trusted him with their kids just because, oh, he's the king of pop, he's a good guy. That's crazy to me. Like, would you ever leave your kids with someone?
I'm, and it's not to be stereotypical, but I'm Mexican, and I know for me, with my family, it's always been, like, no one else can watch the kids besides, like, immediate family, and even then, it was always a woman, it was always somebody between the ages of 20 to 30 to 40, and they've just been well-renowned by everyone else that, yeah, everyone watches, you know, this person watches everyone's kids, but there's no one else. Like, we don't hire babysitters. We don't have men watch our kids. Again, that's from my experience. I don't know about you guys, but I know for sure that that's the way I was growing up. And, you know, I think part of me, I take that with me, where it's just like, I don't want just anyone watching my kids. There's has to be that one person besides my partner, or besides, you know, some very, very close relative that I know my whole entire life. But even then, you never know. Because obviously incidents happen.
Yeah, exactly. And no, my background is similar to yours. I have a Latino father. He wouldn't even let me go outside. He's super overprotective. There's no way in hell he would let anyone watch me except for my mom and my grandma. How about you, Alex?
Sounds good. Yeah, pretty much the same. My parents, even if I were to go stay at, like, a friend's house or something, they'd be like, I need to meet the parents. I need to know who they are. I need to have their numbers. I need, like, they were completely, you know, some would say overprotective, but I don't know. I think it's reasonable, especially if you're a kid, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that was kind of the same experience that with, for me, my mom's like, if you're not going to spend a night at their house unless it's a cousin. And if they want to spend a night over here, that's perfectly fine. But for the most part, you're not going over there. You're 7, and I don't know the family. And even though there's going to be, like, a bunch of 7-year-olds. And at first, I didn't quite understand that. I mean, obviously, it was a bummer. But for the most part, I'm so grateful for that upbringing.
Definitely. Our parents were looking out for us. Shout out to all of our parents. Even my crazy father. Yeah. If these documentaries would have came out 10 years ago, I think I would have had a different opinion back then. But now I'm a lot more self-aware, and I'm able to actually analyze things a bit better.
Sorry, I got jumped on.
You're good. Don't even worry. No, I was just going to say, people are really heartless, and Roseanne Barr is a prime example. You shouldn't be victim blaming. I can't imagine how hard it was for, you know, any of R. Kelly's victims, how hard it must have been for, you know, Wade and James, whatever his last name is, I'm sorry. People need to be a lot more empathetic, I guess. And I think we need to take a hard look at domestic abuse, sexual abuse, and know how victims handle things before we open our mouths and make comments like Roseanne Barr calling all those brave women hoes. That's my biggest thing.
I can't get over that, the fact that she thought that our wonderful president's such a deep.
Yeah, if you're gonna call Donald Trump a deep thinker, I don't want to hear any goddamn opinion you got on social movements from this era. Like, you need to go sit down, go to the Sizzler, relax. But
Sizzler.
Yeah. Sorry. Side story. I went to the Sizzler yesterday over here, I think in Downey, and I got sat next to an elderly white couple that kept talking about how Obama's not really from here. He forged all his documents, and then they were talking about how great Trump was and that we were finally going to get that border wall we need. It was crazy, man. But anyway, Daniela, what were you talking about, social media?
Oh no, I liked your story better.
Dude, I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone, and I try to be, you know, open-minded. I don't, if I see someone with a damn Make America Great Again hat, I ain't gonna try to snatch your hat, I ain't gonna try to mess with you, but we're not friends. That was hell, though, to have to sit through a nice meal and hear all that bullshit.
There's people like that, so as much as we want to deny it, we gotta, I guess, wait for the moment to speak our minds in regards to that.
As we get older, I think it's our jobs to better ourselves and become better people, kinder people. And I just see people doing the complete opposite. It's just a bunch of angry, finger-pointing, victim-blaming. It's fucking horrible.
Absolutely. I feel like we got to end this episode on a lighter note. So J-Lo and A-Rod are engaged, if you guys are wondering.
Anyone? Rock was crazy big.
You saw it? It's ginormous. Like, I'm not big on engagement rings, but that was one giant square.
I only saw it because the hockey team that I follow tweeted it out and said, that's bigger than most ice rinks.
Holy crap.
Any final thoughts on this?
Since we're talking about lighter things, Captain Marvel, that movie fucking killed opening weekend. I think it made like over 150 mil. Did you guys hear about that?
Yes, it's actually the second largest grossing superhero movie, right behind Infinity War.
Incredible. I read about that. Congrats to that whole team. Did you guys see, there was a story circulating and it had a bunch of pictures of Brie Larson working at a movie theater. She's like,
I want to know where she got her jumpsuit at.
Yeah, that was badass as fuck. I was like, where did she get that from? That was really cool, though, that she did that. Do you guys by chance know what theater that might have been?
What's going on? I'm so sorry. I zoned out for like a quick second. Oh, no. You're going to have to backtrack a little bit for my
line. Oh, no, sorry. No, like, I'm all jumbled right now. Sometimes I have really good weeks on this show, and today is just one of those days where my mind is just elsewhere. Brie Larson was doing some concession stand duties at a random movie theater.
Why could she come to me?
Exactly.
I would have loved to work with that.
She had such
a work.
That's the best day ever when Brie Larson shows up and she starts, you know, filling popcorn bags. She was wearing a really awesome jumpsuit too. Alex and I were kind of fangirling over that. It was really cool. I just don't know what theater it was, because from the pictures it didn't look like anything like, I don't know, like anything big, nothing like, God, what is that freaking theater that we have in Hollywood? Arclight. Didn't look like she was in an Arclight or anything. It looked like a little mom and pop theater.
I don't know, but I'm gonna look it up and tell her, hey, yo, come over here. We're a mom and pop theater too.
I don't know if you guys know this, but at the theater that I met Daniela at, Miranda Cosgrove used to frequent that theater quite often, and that's the closest thing we ever got to meeting a star.
Well, to me, you're a star, so, I mean, I did meet you.
Oh, you're so nice. But that's crazy.
I know. I wonder, you know what? I wonder what the health code violations were in regard to this. Like, you didn't have your hair up. Did you wash your hands, Cochina? Like, what are the regulations for this? I'm pretty sure, you know, she's drinking in the middle of the concession stand. No, what is this?
Brie Larson needs to open up a movie theater.
Still can't find the theater.
Oh, you can't?
No, I'm trying to click on every link possible and just not stating the damn theater.
I think it's somewhere local here in LA, probably towards North Hollywood, because that sign looks so familiar. So, I mean, I guess I have to do my theater research, you know, get all the management books out and see what theater comes up. But for the most part, I'm pretty sure it's somewhere in Northern Hollywood.
New Jersey. I am reading it right now. She was at an AMC in New Jersey.
That looks more like an AMC theater. God damn it, AMC.
Damn you, AMC. This is so cute. She's taking these photos with fans. That's awesome. I have given Brie Larson a lot of shit in past episodes, but I take back everything I say.
She worked in a concession stand. I'm fine. I'll give her props. She can put butter in my popcorn.
She's a real one. Hey, Danielle, I got a question about that doc you were talking about earlier, the 2000s? What do they cover? Because I saw the little bit where they were talking about Malcolm in the Middle, and I'm trying to remember what else they talked about. I think they might have mentioned Eminem as well.
So basically, the documentary series on Netflix called The 2000s is basically going over everything that happened within the 2000s. It's about probably about 8-9 episode. 1 hour long each episode, and they go over different aspects of the 2000s. So the beginning episode talks about the television series, you know, and right now, and it's been said several times that we're in a platinum age of television, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's more diversity, there's more options, there's television is just great right now. From 2000 on up, they obviously talk about The Sopranos, The Middle. Then they jump to the next episode, and it's about, like, the stock market. They obviously talk about the politics within the 2000s, which obviously cover, you know, the George Bush administration, 9/11, to obviously the election of Barack Obama and, you know, Hillary Clinton as well.
Nice.
And, you know, it's there's some of them that was kind of, mind you, they do talk about the recession. They talk about the house market. So even that episode was very interesting. That was one of the boring episodes, but for the most part, it was very fascinating. They have different interviews with different celebrities, different people who've affected. They talked about, you know, Steve Jobs and the Apple company and how they basically broke the internet and how the internet came to be, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, I would recommend it. It's, you know, 9 hours of your life. I'm pretty sure you have that time available to, you know, watch this. But, you know, if you want to watch a lighter documentary series, then by all means, I'll watch that one. So, yeah.
That sounds amazing. Good. Did you guys ever watch VH1 used to do this thing where they would talk about, like, the 80s, the 70s, the 90s. I love the 80s. I love the 90s. I think that's what the series was named. Did you guys watch that growing up at all?
I think I watched like a few of them. I think my dad used to watch them more than anything. And so I would just sit there and watch it with him. But yeah, I remember that. And I thought they had like another, oh no, maybe it was just music videos for another show that they did where they would just focus on a time era and they would just play all the most popular songs and music videos from that.
That's, you know, I saw a website or a link that came up recently that was basically, it's Pop something. I wish I had the name for it, but it's basically saying that it's going to be a channel that basically plays from music videos from the 70s, you know, from the 60s on up. Obviously, the 80s and the 90s were popular with music videos. So that's going to be exciting. I saw a bunch of Britney Spears music videos, and I'm thinking to myself, all right.
Yeah. Do you guys have a favorite era?
No, they don't.
Or a favorite decade? Sorry to cut you off.
Besides living in the present time? I would love to have lived in the 80s. I know I was born in the 90s, but I would love to have actually lived in my 20s during the 80s.
Alex, how about you?
Or if not the 60s.
Oh, the 60s. That would have been cool, too. Woodstock.
Yeah, Alex?
I'm going to go with these. I wish I was a little bit older in the 90s and not a child. But yeah, I'm going to go with the 90s.
Nice.
I
would like to have been a Brown Beret.
Nice, yeah.
Gosh.
I used to romanticize the 80s a lot in high school, but now that I'm older, I'm totally okay with the age I am. I like living in this time period. So yeah, I'm good where I'm at right now.
It's so funny you said that because I asked the same question to a coworker of mine, and he's an African-American male, and I told him, I was like, hey, what era would you like to have lived in? He's like, bitch, I would love to live now. Like, any other era for me, I would have been fucked. And, you know, it finally hit me, and I'm like, god damn it. I thought it was going to be like the 1920s because it's Great Gatsby, but he's right. I mean, he knows his truth, and I know my truth, too, that I know that I wouldn't have been okay until probably about, I don't know, the 90s, maybe.
When I met my wife, we couldn't even legally get married, so I wouldn't want to live in any past era for similar reasons.
I think the same too. I don't think I probably wouldn't survive in any era before the 80s, probably.
I think what's nice now in this era is not only do we have the social media generation going on, and yes, it has its ups and downs, but I think for the main part, I feel that in our generation, we are dealing with the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s all at once. And I think that's an awesome and scary thing.
I just hope that the 2020 presidential election goes a lot better than what happened in 2016. Sorry.
You know what?
Side note.
I am very hopeful. Hey, there's a lot of Democratic candidates already coming out to be, so, you know, Kanye West, 2020.
Imagine. That would have been epic as fuck. Kanye West versus Donald Trump before you realize that Kanye West is just Donald Trump.
Damn. So one of my script ideas back in 2008, it was... Obviously, it was when Obama became president, and I was super excited. It's like, I mean, we live in a time period which we have our first black president. Yeah. But one of my scripts was like, well, that'll be so awesome if Obama is actually Osama bin Laden.
Plot twist. Sorry to cut you off there. You wrote a 5-page paper on that?
Yeah, it was a 5-page paper, basically, you know, building up my story. My professor is like, this is an amazing concept, but you have some errors. I'm like, I know, I get it. It's supposed to be a joke. It's, hello, aha, it's not supposed to be taken seriously. This is not SNL? Okay, never mind.
I think we covered everything. This episode's a little bit shorter than I thought it would be. Are we forgetting anything? Should we end it here?
Go watch 2000 and Bobby Kennedy, the president. I want to talk about that.
Oh, shoot. I forgot about that. Tell us about the Bobby Kennedy doc.
Like I'm pitching a story. All right. So Bobby Kennedy for president is basically the lead up and to the assassination. It's a 4-hour documentary series of the lead up and to the assassination of Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, which is obviously John F. Kennedy's brother. And how he was obviously connected since, you know, his brother was president in 1963, I think it is. Because I know that he got married in 1964. Jeez. Around that time period.
Jesus.
But, yeah, and he's connected to, he obviously helped Martin Luther King escape jail time. you know, they talked about, you know, there's a lot of, I feel like there's a conspiracy behind all this. Obviously, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in 1968 here in LA. And obviously, they talked about that too, and how his legacy kind of still lives on to this day. So, if you want a little bit of history, there you go.
Incredible. Are you still reading A People's History of the United States? Were you reading that?
Oh, yeah, I still am.
How's that going?
I'm on the slow beginnings. It's a slow read because there's a lot of words. It's a 600-page book, so it's going to take me a while.
Yeah. That is massive. Holy shit.
Alex, it's not even like Harry Potter 600.
It's all small print. Damn. I read that in junior high, strange enough, and that took me a while to get through. My dad made me read that.
Give me 10 years, I'll be done with it then.
That sounds about right. There's a lot to digest. Sorry, Alex, I was going to say, we talked about a little bit about, you know, what I've been watching, what Daniela's been watching. Have you seen anything cool lately? What have you been watching?
I actually haven't been watching much except for just YouTube, but no. See, I don't watch a lot of documentaries. I think the closest documentary that I've watched is The Chef's Table.
What's that about?
I felt the same way. Yeah, what is that about?
It just follows different chefs from around the world, and it just kind of gives like detail and into their lives and why they became a chef and why they cook the types of food that they cook and stuff like that. So it's like very like culture based around their backgrounds and stuff.
Nice. I'll have to look into that. I'm running out of things to watch. I have a couple animes that I need to pick up and finish. I have no time. Okay, I guess.
Oh my god.
Huh? What was that?
Oh, I feel the same way. There's just so much to watch.
Yeah, it's like, how do you make time for books? How do you make time for movies? And how the fuck do you make time for video games on top of all that? I don't know how to do it, so I'm still figuring that out. I guess we'll end this episode. We went through some pretty heavy topics today. Sorry if this episode was a bit of a downer, guys. And you can actually get this episode a day early and ad-free if you're one of our $1 Patreon supporters. We love you for listening. You don't have to pledge, but we do have pledges that start as little as just a buck a month. That's amazing. Shout out to our exclusive producer, Grayson Barker, Warlord Hitman 98 on Twitter. He is an exclusive producer of this podcast, and you can become one too by pledging to the $15 tier on our Patreon. You will also receive pins and stickers as they are made and a postcard from us here. Make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at @thenerdcorpse_, or you can follow us on Instagram at @thenerdcorpse. You can find me on Instagram under Young Loud and Ashley. You can find me on Twitter under @xartemis with a 3x. Where can they find you guys?
You can find me. Yeah, go for it. Go.
Been saying my Instagram and Twitter handle wrong. It's @alexalm_design. Sorry about that.
Ooh.
But yeah, on both of those.
I also so sorry, go ahead, plug.
Go on, Ashley.
No, I was just going to say, Alex, I've been looking at what you've been putting up lately, and your designs are really awesome.
Thanks. I've been trying to take a break from it and just do, like, abstract stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. I think it's pretty awesome. It's very, I can see you.
Daniela, where can our listeners find you?
On Instagram and Twitter at La Vanilla Mexicana, but instead of the two L's, it's 2-1, so La Vanny 1-1 Mexicana. But I'm there, so hit me up if you want to say hi.
Nice.
Or not. Don't be weird.
Don't be weird. Don't be a weirdo. I saw a very interesting Twitter exchange that Raul was having with someone. I don't know if you saw it, but like Raul retweeted someone's tweet and was like, who the hell are you and why are you tweeting at me? I don't want to go into detail of what the tweet said, but it's kind of graphic, but it's very funny. Go check out Raul's Twitter and laugh about that.
I'm so gonna laugh right now. I'm on it.
But yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and sorry that I've been just mumbling and rambling. Maybe next week I'll be more focused. Have a good one. Bye!
Bye, guys.